You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's five AL East beat reporters. We're talking about the returns of J.J. Hardy and Matt Wieters and Chris Davis's nice start at the plate. When we talk Orioles, when we talk Red Sox, we'll be looking at Hanley Ramirez and the left field situation, as well as the catching situation and what's going on with Clay Buchholz. Talking Yankees and drilling down on Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez's starts. We talk Rays. We'll be looking at Alex Cobb's injury, Desmond Jennings' injury, and the catching situation. We talk Toronto Blue Jays. We'll be looking at the starting rotation, Dalton Pompey, Jose Bautista, and Michael Saunders. Ian, first with the news, how is Hanley Ramirez?
Well, we're going to know more in the coming days here, but it's certainly a concern with Hanley Ramirez. Bangs his shoulder into the left field corner of Fenway Park, making what looked like a pretty nice catch, only to have it a weird call by the umpire. But, I think that it's concerning because he's had two shoulder surgeries in his career on that same shoulder. And with a shoulder, sprain or whatever they're calling it, you never really know the severity until a few days later to see how quickly it heals. But, this guy's been hitting at such a high level that you don't want any, even if he does come back soon, you don't want any nagging injuries to sort of impact the way he's been hitting. I mean, like I've been saying, he's the one biggest bright spot of their season so far. Really, it's been a season that hasn't had a lot of great storylines for the Red Sox, and Hanley's been one of them so far. So, yeah, it's really concerning right now until you know the true severity of it.
Are they in a position where they are comfortable really being emphatic with him about not coming back too soon? I mean, it's kind of a tough position. They need his bat, but at the same time, as you note, front shoulder for a power hitter is it's not quite up there with a wrist, but it's one of those injuries that can be a really big deal and can have lingering effects.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to be smart with it. They're not, they made a pretty good investment in this guy for 4 years, and then an option year for a fifth. You're paying him quite a bit of money, so I think that the Red Sox will do good. Looking at the big picture here, looking at the fact that they have a guy sitting around in Alan Craig who's been a pretty good player in his career. And, he obviously hasn't been able to get on track yet this season, but he also has been playing regularly. So maybe if there's one bright spot to Hanley Ramirez being out for maybe a short amount of time, is that you can get Alan Craig regular at bats. I mean, if I'm John Farrell, I know he's got Brock Holt sitting around on the bench. I know he's got Daniel Nava sitting around on the bench sometimes. I would put Alan Craig's name in the lineup every single day until Hanley Ramirez gets back, just to see if he can get this guy on track and get him back to what he was. Because if he even gets close to what he was when he was in St. Louis, you're not going to miss a ton of offense, even with Hanley Ramirez out.
And you kind of set me up there. I mean, I think everybody knows what I would do, which is I would make sure that the wrench was in the lineup on a daily basis. And it sounds like that's what you do. Do you think that's what John Farrell is going to do? Do you think that for now, Alan Craig is the left fielder until Ramirez is back, or do you think that maybe it's more mix and match than that?
Maybe a little more mix and match, but I would say right now, Craig is certainly going to get the bulk of the starts because, look, you're already down Shane Victorino in right field for about another week or so. So you have Brock Holt getting most of the starts in right. Daniel Nava has gotten off to a start that's almost as slow as the one Alan Craig has gotten off to. So yeah, I think you are going to see Craig out there the bulk of the time and left that while Hanley's out.
And what is Victorino's status right now?
Yeah, Victorino, he's going to go on a rehab at the end of this week, and the goal is to get Shane Victorino back in the lineup for the West Coast trip that starts a week from yesterday. So it starts in 6 days from now in Oakland. They're going to skip playing him in Toronto on that turf next week. This weekend. They don't think that's going to do him any good. So it'll be interesting to see how much Shane Victorino plays when he comes back. Because, look, Brock Holt's done a pretty nice job in right field lately and also doing a nice job at the plate. So Shane is going to kind of have to earn his playing time a little bit, I think, when he comes back.
And it's like you're campaigning to remove me from my job. You keep asking my questions before I ask them. Because that is one thing I'm wondering is they made a big statement about, and Victorino himself really kind of made a big statement in the spring, that a healthy Victorino is basically an everyday player on this team. And I wonder if that's still the case. Does he come back, and is he an everyday player? And I think the second question, and maybe the more important question, because I think we know he's not going to be exactly an everyday player, is how much of a problem is that? I mean, Shane Victorino has a reputation certainly as a winner and a good clubhouse guy. He's also a very proud guy, and I don't think he's going to be a guy who's real happy to be sitting if he's healthy and on the roster.
Yeah, look, I think Shane, you know, he understands the situation. He knows that it's a game of production, and he knows that, you know, he's had a chance here to produce early in the season. They didn't do it. I think he'd like to get some more at-bats when he comes back to get another little chance. But he knows that if, bottom line, if he's not producing, they have other options. I don't think Shane Victorino is going to make a big stink about it. He knew the deal coming in. And I think he really appreciated that John Farrell gave him the job and said it was his job to lose going into spring, and then he gave it to him, and Shane not only didn't hit, but then he kind of got another hamstring injury. So I think Shane's very accountable, and he really appreciates the way John Farrell is handling this. So, you know, I don't think it's been a problem. It'll be a problem. And the one thing John Farrell said, he said, fully healthy and fully capable, Shane Victorino's our right fielder. I mean, Shane, at least offensively, didn't seem fully capable in April of doing what he had done in the past. You know, maybe it was cold weather, maybe it was getting his timing back, but it's sure going to be interesting to see how he responds at the plate when he does come back next week.
And the other fairly major injury situation for the Red Sox, they're now doing without Ryan Hannigan. How exactly are they going to handle that? I mean, that's already not an ideal situation to start with, but how do they go forward with catching position?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of very similar to Christian Vasquez last year. You know, you're sort of throwing him into the fire. With Vasquez, it was July of last year. You know, with Hannigan, with Swihart, it's earlier in the season. It's in May, so you hope that he can handle it. He's as good a prospect as people think. I think maybe they'd still like to get another a guy more impressive than Sandy Leon to sort of share the playing time with Swihart, because you just can't put Sandy Leon in the lineup very much because he does not give you very much offense, if any. So I think that's maybe the bigger thing they're going to try to find is sort of a veteran backup to pair with Swihart. Maybe somebody can sort of mentor him a little bit, because you remember last year Vasquez had David Ross, and that was kind of an ideal situation for him. So I think they might do kind of a similar thing, you know, in the coming weeks here with Swihart. But certainly he is going to get the majority of the playing time behind the plate.
If someone were inclined to put two and two together and get four, that someone could note that Jared Saltalamacchia was just released, and then also note that guy has a little bit of history with that organization. Is there a potential fit there?
Yeah, Matthew, from what I've gathered, the Red Sox just don't seem to think there is a fit anymore, and I think that Saltalamacchia, for whatever reason, has lost a lot in the last couple of years. I don't think he had a great falling out with the team in the World Series when, you know, Salty was benched midway through the World Series, and from their perception, he kind of sulked a little bit, I think, and I think it left a bad taste in some people's mouths. And I also think that quietly they wonder how good a catcher he is, you know, behind the plate. I think they have a lot of questions about his defense, and you've certainly seen his defense drop off, you know, in the time he's been, you know, with the Miami Marlins. So I don't see a Salty reunion at this point.
Well, now I want to geek out a little bit, because we can't do one of these without talking about Clay Buchholz, but we also can't talk about the same things every time. So I did a little look at his numbers, and there are some really interesting things in there. He's getting absolutely obliterated with runners in scoring position. Hitters are hitting .484 against him with runners in scoring position, because it jumps out. His strikeout rate's pretty good. His walk rate's pretty good. His home run rate's pretty good. All those peripherals look good, and he's just getting crushed in RBI situations. Do you think there's anything to that? Is there anything that he might be giving away? Is he maybe tipping? Does he get too fastball happy? Is there any reason you could see that would be the case?
Yeah, it's funny with Clay. He keeps talking about bad luck and the balls not getting hit at guys, and that gets tough to hear for a while if you're if you're a Red Sox player, if you're a Red Sox fan, because you know you want to see results from this guy, and you need this guy more than ever right now. And I think that it's the same old thing, that when some adversity mounts, he's really having a hard time stopping the bleeding, and you just wonder, you know, if he's ever really gotten his stuff back from that injury. That he was the best pitcher in the American League the first 2-3 months of 2013, and he just, you know, we're going on a season plus now, including all of last year and into this year, where he hasn't been that same guy. He just doesn't have the put-away stuff that he used to have. So it's very concerning right now. You just wonder if he's still trying to overcome some sort of mental hurdle here. But Clay Buchholz, I think, is the most concerning point of this entire team right now.
One other thing that I noticed in looking through there is he's been at his worst the first time through the order, and then more effective later, which is kind of unusual. Typically, there's a real penalty. The more times hitters see you, the more luck they have. again, we probably should have talked beforehand. I probably should have run these numbers by you so I'm not just throwing them at you. But, again, is that something where that kind of jives with what you're seeing? Is there a reason that you would see with him that that would be that would make sense or that would be the case?
No, but I will tell you this. I mean, that's the complete opposite of what they need right now because, well, it's nice that he's kind of getting back in the game and not just, you know, completely giving in like he did that night at Yankee Stadium earlier in the season. You know, you need the guy who's perceived as your best starting pitcher. You need him to come out and set an early tone, give your team a chance to take the lead instead of playing from behind every night. So it's just, you know, whatever reason, he's not as focused as he should be early in the game. He's not executing like he should be early in the game. And, you know, it's all very concerning and alarming. And, you know, they have a $13 million option on him for next season that once looked like a complete no-brainer given the price of pitching these days. But right now I don't see it as a no-brainer. So I think Clay Buchholz is not only pitching to try to keep this team in the pennant race, but he's also pitching to stay in Boston next year right now.
Brian, I got a whole lot of names on a list. My list of questions for you is basically a whole bunch of guys to ask about how they're doing so well. Things are looking okay. Awfully good in Yankee land these days, at least among the guys who are healthy. I think the guy who intrigues me most is Mark Teixeira, who has really gotten off to a strong start. Is this just a matter of him finally being healthy?
I think you're seeing a lot of that. I think that right wrist injury, and we've talked about it a bunch, it really takes a full year to come back from that. You can get on the field and you can play, but there were so many times last year he was hindered by that. There was lingering soreness. He doesn't have any of that right now. I mean, he preventatively ices it. Yeah, you see him in the clubhouse with ice on the wrist, but it's not because he's in pain. It's just to make sure he's not in pain. So that's a big improvement from last year. One other thing that I think is notable, and you look at the 9 home runs now, last year, if you threw him a fastball up, there was a good chance he wasn't going to get around on it and he'd foul it back. Now that wrist is so much stronger, he's getting around on those pitches, and he's punishing a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his numbers, and they're interesting because the batting average is not good, and yet nearly every other indicator is good. He's walked more than he's struck out. You know, he's never been one of those insane 180 strikeout guys, but the strikeouts are at a reasonable number. I mean, it almost seems like there's room for him to get better. It seems like there's room for him to get some more singles and doubles while, I mean, he's not going to probably hit 60 home runs this year, but it seems like there is room for improvement even within this encouraging start.
There was a point this year where I actually did the numbers, and he was on pace for over 60 homers, and he would have had less than 20 singles. Now, I don't think that that's going to really happen, but I think you're seeing him lose a lot of those singles to the shift, and this goes back to what we were saying in spring training with him, and he was asked the same question we seem to ask him every year, at least the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, how are you going to beat the shift? And he said, the way to beat the shift is to hit doubles and homers. And so far, that's what he's doing.
Do you think 2010, 2011 is a reasonable thing to expect from him? 250-ish in the 30s in home runs, batting on base in the 340, 350, 360 kind of range at season's end?
Yeah, I mean, he's digging himself a little bit of a hole here with the 200 batting average. He may not be able to climb out of that, but if you look at the OPS and you're right, the slugging, the on-base, all those numbers look good. So, you know, I think that Teixeira is a key case of if people want to make the point that batting average isn't everything, look at that, because I think that your mind tells you, the eye test tells you, this guy's having a good year, and then you look at the batting average and you say, he's not really having a good year. Yes, he is. He's giving the Yankees power. He's giving them everything that they're asking for. He's driving in runs. Even when he's not getting hits, he's lifting sack flies, being productive. Mark Teixeira is having a pretty good start to the year.
Another guy who is having a pretty good start to the year, I think we didn't talk about him last week, so we're contractually obligated this week. Alex Rodriguez, kind of a similar shape to his numbers, not a great batting average, drawing his walks, hitting his home runs. He got a little funky before hitting .660. How does he overall just kind of look at the plate? That's kind of an odd assortment of numbers from him. How does he look to you at the plate?
Yeah, I think he went in a little bit of a funk there, and he even acknowledged he was pressing about the milestone. This is something that he's dealt with before. When he was sitting on .600, he was pressing a little bit there, and it took a while to get it, I think. He got a 3-0 pitch at Fenway. He hit that bomb in the left field seats, and that ball got out in a hurry. I think that the one thing you're seeing with Alex is, look, he's going to strike out. He is. It's just going to happen. But when he makes contact, I think he hits the ball about as hard as anybody in the American League right now, consistently. So I think whether it's the year off gave him a little life back in his legs, you know, he could swing the bat with a little more authority. He looks better than the guy we saw at the end of 2013. And I think that that was pretty much the benchmark that I was going to go off. That's what I expected him to be, the player who came back in that weird kind of half season where he was hurt and then he came back and then he was suspended. And I think he's better than that guy right now. I think that DHing has helped him. That's probably keeping him a lot fresher. He's hardly played in the field at all, which is basically the way the Yankees had envisioned it. But they know he's there if they need him to step in at third or at first. And he's done that a handful of times, and I expect that to continue. But if he can stay in the DH role and good communication with Girardi continues, there's no reason why he can't continue to be this level of productive player for the rest of the year.
You know that he has always struck out, and it's really remarkable to some extent. He struck out 104 times, hitting .358, struck out 139 times, hitting .321. So it's always been there. But do you sense any degree to which he's maybe trading a little contact for power consciously?
I think he probably wants to kill the ball. I think that's what you're seeing with 660 and why he was stuck on that. I mean, there was that game against the game at the stadium, the extra inning game. I even forget who it's against. But he went 0 for 6 in that game, and you could tell that he was coming out of his zone. He was chasing pitches down. I think that if he can stay within himself and put his A swing, as he calls it, on the ball, the results more often than not are going to be productive. The Yankees are very satisfied with what they've gotten from Alex so far. I think that not only has he been productive on the field, but he's been a good citizen in the clubhouse. And one thing that jumps out at me is what Brett Gardner said at Fenway. And Gardy said that a lot of his teammates have come up. A lot of the guys on this team have not played with A-Rod. A lot of those players have come up to Gardner and said, you know, he's a lot different than I thought he was going to be. So I think that that's a good sign for the Yankees. With what that relationship, how bad it looked, the fact that he can come in there and it's not a toxic environment, it's actually a productive environment. He was helping out Didi Gregorius at shortstop. I think that Alex wants to rewrite the story as much as he possibly can, and so far he's taken advantage of that opportunity.
Excuse me, not just this year, but over recent years, and look, I was around him some when he was real young. He was never a bad guy, but do you think that his clubhouse presence has been misperceived over in recent years? I mean, again, none of us really know what these guys are like on the bus, on the plane. That's the truth. But do you think that people have, outside that clubhouse, outside the Yankees, have maybe had a misperception of what he's like as a teammate, as a guy in the clubhouse over several years?
Well, I've never really heard that Alex is a bad teammate. If anything, it's the converse. You know, he's been very generous with his money, with time, with helping out younger players. You know, before Didi, I can remember him with Robbie Cano and Melky Cabrera and Eduardo Nunez and taking these guys, especially the Spanish-speaking guys, and taking them under his wing and showing them what it is to be a young, rich, famous professional athlete in New York City in your 20s. You know, not that he played here in his 20s, but he's seen enough of it. So I think that I think the problem with the perception of Alex is a lot of us only see what comes through the media, especially the fans at home. And a lot of times Alex has been difficult with the media. I think that he has had to watch his words carefully. You know, I think that there's been a lot of times where he's put his foot in his mouth. There's been a lot of times where he's been places where he shouldn't be. The tabloids, obviously, anything he does will sensationalize it. So that you've seen more back pages with him than you probably would with other players. I think that between the white lines, A-Rod is most comfortable. I think that that's the place where he really excels. I think that he knows baseball inside and out, and it's been a treat. Now this year, he's been a little more forthcoming with his analysis. I think that he's trying to maybe not step into the captain role, but be a leader and come back and be a positive influence on the team. And when he decides to break down a play or maybe expand upon what is going on between the lines, I think that he sees things that other people don't see. I think his baseball IQ is off the charts. I think that it's when he's not between those white lines that he can get himself into trouble. But thus far this year, he has seemed to be a different person.
Brian Cashman's comments on the bonus were pretty clear, and not, I didn't take them as particularly belligerent at all. It was just, here's the understanding of, here's the language, here's how we plan to proceed. A-Rod doesn't, and his camp don't seem to be rattling sabers. Do you think there's any chance that this whole thing passes without incident, or is that not possible?
I wouldn't walk away from $6 million, so I think it's a lot for to say that Alex will just forfeit and say, yeah, you're right. None of us have actually seen the actual contract. We've gotten snippets of it. Brian Cashman said that at Fenway. He said, if you get a chance to read the contract, read it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Well, you know, if the Yankees want to fax one over, I'm sure I'll take a look at it. But I think, I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. But what it says is that the Yankees have the right and not the obligation to pay for the home run milestone. So if that's the case and it's cut and dry, clearly I'm not a lawyer. The Yankees can afford one, so can Alex. They could take that to arbitration and have a route to dispute that. If Alex thinks that he should get paid the $6 million, if the Yankees decide that they are absolutely not going to, which it sounds like. But if it's there in writing and it says it's basically like an option, Cashman made the point it's not like an innings pitch bonus where you say, all right, a guy, if he throws 200 innings, we pay him X amount of dollars. It's not that kind of agreement. So this is different. It's something that's not in any other player's contract. It's not going to be in any future contracts because it's been phased out, but this one's grandfathered in. So obviously this deal was set in 2007 when the landscape was a lot different than what we know now regarding Alex. And so I think that there's a very good chance that you'll be reading about this at some point in the offseason, but I think for Alex's sake, he would prefer that it not come in. He used the term family business. I think he's going to try and get through the year and then deal with this and let the chips fall wherever they may at the end of the year.
Barry, what in the world is going on with the rotation? Daniel Norris is out. Albert's got to start. Now Estrada. What's going on with that rotation spot?
Yeah, it's really kind of, I mean, they're looking for results right now. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to, and that's something that they haven't gotten through the first month of the season. They ended up kind of pulling the chute a little bit quicker than I was expecting on Norris. That move caught me by surprise, and I think caught a lot of other people by surprise, too. The one thing with that is, I think the hope from the organization is that it's a short-term thing. The one thing they like to compare it to is Marcus Stroman coming up last year for a brief period of time. He went down for about 17 days and then eventually found his way up here. So I think the Blue Jays are just kind of hoping that it's a temporary thing where he goes down and works on his secondary pitches, which he was really having a tough time commanding up at the big league level. He was kind of almost becoming a one-pitch guy up here. And when they saw that, they really wanted him to be able to go down and work on some things because that's something you just can't do at this level. So that's a bit of a disappointment, but there's a few other issues that they've had as well. I mean, just the entire staff, 1 through 5, has struggled. Walks have been a major, major concern for this team. And Aaron Sanchez, a guy who's leading the league in walks, and, I mean, he's had now a game where he walked 7. He had another game where he walked 6. I mean, that's something that just can't continue. Even if he's getting some ground balls to escape some of those jams with some double plays, that's a trend that can't continue because ultimately he's eventually going to have to pay for that.
What made Norris the guy, given that nearly everybody in the rotation is having a hard time, and his results at least were at least as good, if not better, than some of the other candidates?
Yeah, exactly. And it was, I think that's one of the reasons why it was such a surprise. And, you know, there were some starts there where, the earned runs weren't there because he was able to get out of some jams. And you know, there was a start recently against the Red Sox where, he was only able to go 3 innings and he threw, high 80s in terms of pitch count. But he didn't give up any runs in that game. And that was a situation where he kept being able to escape those jams. And one of the reasons why is that the one thing he was able to do up here was really limit opponents when there were runners in scoring positions. So that's kind of why I thought they'd give him a little bit more time to kind of work through it up here. But I guess they've seen a few small things that they think that if he goes down, makes 2 or 3 starts in AAA, can hopefully get that worked out and then come back up. But, I mean, he was just kind of one of many problems that they had in the rotation, and he was able to survive, but they want him to excel at this level.
Yeah, meanwhile, Aaron Sanchez has walked nearly a batter an inning over 5 starts. Should he be looking over his shoulder as well?
Well, that was actually the guy I thought that was kind of, in the situation that Norris was, where eventually they might have to make a move, and the command is the main reason why. Now, similarly to Norris, he has been able at least a few times to escape those jams, and so it hasn't been as the results haven't been as bad as probably they should have been in some of those starts. He was able to survive, and that's a positive, I guess. But I mean, those number of walks have just been way too high, and that's something that he simply can't continue. I mean, this is a guy who's probably never, even if he gets into his prime and establishes himself in the big leagues, this isn't a guy who's going to get through many starts without walking a batter. But when you get upwards of 6 and 7 per start, I mean, that's just too many free base runners, and ultimately that's going to cost him. So for him, it comes down to the, you know, fastball command. He's got a sinker that moves all over the place, and he's had a hard time figuring out where it's going at times, and that's something that he's going to have to really fix. But as of right now, I don't think he has to look over his shoulder too much, because the Blue Jays are also kind of running out of options here for guys who can come in and make those fill-in starts. Marco Estrada was the first in line, and he's in the rotation now. And you know, a couple weeks when Norris eventually comes back, if everything goes well in AAA, then Sanchez might have to kind of look over his shoulder a little bit. But for the immediate future, he's safe right now.
Is Sanchez just missing, or is there an approach thing? Is he nibbling or missing, or is it some of both?
It's a little bit of both, but I mean, this really is a problem that now goes back several years. I mean, this is kind of what we heard about him coming up through the minor leagues, that he'd have these starts where the walks are just way too high, and I think he just has a lot of problems commanding the sinker at times. And I don't think he's trying to be too fine. I think a lot of times he just doesn't really know where the movement is going to go, and he's had a little bit of a problem with his approach. The one surprise was last year when he came up in the bullpen. He didn't have a lot of those issues, and I think there's something to be said for just coming in, almost going at a max effort and kind of just attacking the zone, and that's probably something he has to get back to a little bit. I think early on this season, he was a little bit too cautious coming into starts, trying to conserve energy, and that really kind of backfired for him in a start in Baltimore. When he comes in and doesn't worry about the other things quite as much, I think is when he has a opportunity to be more effective.
Mark Burley has struck out six of the last 80 batters he's faced. Drew Hutchison has struck out 2 of the last 45 batters he's faced. Now, I know Burley is not a strikeout guy, but both of those numbers are way, way too low. How big a concern is it, just broadly, getting away from the back of the rotation? That's something that's not sustainable. You can't win games with your starters not striking anybody out.
No, absolutely. And the big surprise for me has been Hutchison, and that's something that we just haven't seen from him. And there was a start, again, another recent one against Boston, where he didn't strike out a single guy, and he walked 5. And that's just not the Drew Hutchison that the Blue Jays have been used to when he was coming up through the minor leagues and during the 2 years that he was on the big league roster. That's, he needs to get back to those put away pitches, because that's where his strength is. And he just hasn't been able to find a rhythm yet. He's had plenty of run support this year. There's been multiple times now where he's carried a big lead into the third, fourth inning, and he can't get out of the fifth. And when you're staked to a 5-6 run lead, I mean, those are the type of games you absolutely have to win. And he hasn't been able to do that so far. And, you know, these are kind of the main reasons why there's so much concern all the way 1 through 5, because there really hasn't been anyone who's kind of taken the reins here. I mean, R.A. Dickey has started to look good over his last few starts. He seems to be turning it around. But with the exception of him, everybody else is really struggling to find a groove. And for some of them, it's mechanics. I think Burley, in his particular case, I think he's banged up a little bit and is trying to, pitch through a little bit of discomfort and trying to, keep that streak alive of not going on the DL. So for every guy, it's kind of a different reason, but overall the group is struggling.
Norris was not the only guy sent down recently, something we had talked about and presumably didn't shock you. Dalton Pompeo was sent down. Is the expectation that that's relatively brief, he'll get his groove back and come back, or is that something where the current state of affairs might be in effect for a while?
I think that's one that could probably become a little bit more of a long-term thing, and I think the main reason for that is the play of Kevin Pillar. He was a guy who came into spring training really kind of with the expectation of being the fourth outfielder, and then the injury to Michael Saunders really presented him with with an additional opportunity to seize regular playing time, and he's been one of the pleasant surprises on this team so far. Now, the big concern with him is whether or not he can actually continue that level of production, and he's not a guy who takes many walks at all, and that's a long-term concern. But for the immediate future, he's been providing, you know, gold glove caliber defense in the outfield, really. I mean, he's become a regular on the highlight reels with some of the plays he's been making out there, and he's been doing okay with the bat, and so that really won him the job over Pompey. The one thing that did surprise me about Pompey was the timing of that move, because Batista is still another week away, at least, from playing right field. I kind of thought that the Blue Jays might stick with Pompey at least until Batista was ready to go, but now we've seen kind of a rotation coming through already. You know, Ezekiel Carreras had an opportunity. Chris Colabello was called up this week to get some time in the outfield. So without Pompey, it's almost become kind of a game of musical chairs out there as the Blue Jays try and fill in the gaps until Batista can play defensively.
And you set me right up for my next question, which is what exactly is going on with Batista? How long do you expect him to continue to be limited to DH duty?
It's gone on longer than the Jays had originally hoped for. You know, originally that was supposed to just, you know, hopefully just be a series or two where he just got some at-bats at DH. But, I mean, his condition, everybody's saying the right things. He's feeling a little bit better. But the fact remains he hasn't picked up a baseball yet since he strained his shoulder against Baltimore going back almost a week and a half now. And so, there's until he starts a throwing program, it's not going to take him long like it would a pitcher, obviously, but I mean there's still some drills and some things that he's going to have to go through, and that's going to take a few days before he can really start unleashing things without any kind of concern in the right field. And the Blue Jays aren't going to put him back there until that no longer becomes an issue. So I think at the very least it's going to be another seven days, and I think that's if there's some improvement soon. This could be something that, you know, really drags into the middle of May, potentially a tiny bit longer.
One last thing, Michael Saunders getting a little breather here. What's the level of concern over his health status?
He hasn't really looked good since he came up here. And you know, we had heard lots of reports of how he was in the minor leagues, and supposedly everything was going just fine down there. But really, since he came up to the big leagues, I mean, that knee has been an issue. And you could see him noticeably hobbling at times. The range in the outfield hasn't been particularly good. I think the expectation is that this is something that will eventually just go away the further he gets removed from surgery. But he had some fluid drained from his knee this week, is available to play, but the Blue Jays are trying to give him a little bit of extra rest as well, so that doesn't become any kind of long-term thing and that there's no setback. But clearly he needs a little bit more time, and the Jays are just hoping that he can work through those things at the big league level as opposed to, you know, having another DL stint or something like that and then having to actually leave the team.
Britt, you went from one really odd situation to another, and not to really compare them because one was genuinely scary and one was just weird, but what was the atmosphere like in St. Petersburg this weekend for the home games that weren't home games?
It was actually surprisingly nice. I think there's something to be said for having a baseball crowd, and that's what you got there. All too often we've seen people in the first few rows at stadiums that could care less about what's actually going on the field. This case was different. It was general admission, so people got there extra early to get good seats. It kind of felt like a high school game at times because you could sit wherever you want. The Orioles fans gravitated towards the Orioles side of the dugout, Rays fans on the other side. So it was very interesting, and I think that the Rays fans were very supportive of everything going on. There was a lot of signs. They really paid homage to some of the Orioles traditions. The Orioles bird was on hand. They played John Denver, thank God I'm a country boy, which, of course, they always do at Camden Yards. So there were little touches of home here and there. Obviously, it was a really weird series, as you mentioned, but I was pleasantly surprised with the atmosphere.
How big a deal is it, or how much of a comfort is it for these guys to settle in one place for a week now? I know it's road series, but they're in one series for a week. It's some semblance of normal at ease, or is it not?
Not really. I feel like there's always a lot going on in New York, as you know, from being down here and playing the Mets and the Yankees. I mean, it's nice that they're back-to-back like this, that they don't have to travel, like you alluded to, but I just don't think they're going to have any sense of normalcy until they finally go home May 11th, have their first home game in, quite some time. And I think then have a nice long homestand. They'll start to kind of get their bearings a little bit, but I don't think anything about this whole last week and a half has been normal for them at all.
This just within the last couple days, J.J. Hardy and Ryan Flaherty have begun minor league rehabilitation assignments. How close are those guys to being back on the major league roster?
Very close. I think the plan is for them to play tonight as well, tomorrow, and then reevaluate on Thursday. And there's a real chance that both of them join the Orioles and that they're here, take Thursday as kind of a travel day, and that they're here for the weekend set against the Yankees. Ryan Flaherty is a guy who is eligible to come off the DL on Friday. So he obviously has not been sidelined very long. J.J. Hardy hasn't made his season debut, so he could need another couple of bats. They might have him hold off a day or two down there at Bowie, depending on if he needs it. But he looked really good last night. He had a single in his first at bat. Him and Flaherty were 3-for-8 combined. So I think the expectation is that they're both joining them in New York at some point.
The team's been doing pretty well in the absence of a pretty key player like Hardy. How much of a difference does it make to get him back and start getting this team, again, ever closer to being whole?
It's huge. I think Hardy, you can make the case, is more important for them to get back than Matt Wieters. You know, he's really captain that infield defense. You know what you're going to get up the middle from him. He's just a steadying presence, more of a quiet leader in there. And I think that having him, obviously, at shortstop allows you to do things at second base, put Everest Cabrera over there, you know, rotate in some guys. Maybe Steve Pierce has been playing some second base. It makes things a lot better knowing you have Hardy over there at shortstop. So, to me, he's a big, big piece that could be coming back.
And you mentioned Wieters, who remains farther away. It seems, again, from the outside, it just seems like kind of an odd and confusing situation the way it is developing or maybe not developing. I know we talk about him a lot, but what's your understanding of Wieters' status as we speak now?
Yeah, it is odd and confusing. I agree with you. So it's weird because we talked all spring, and they kind of rushed, it seems like, to get him March 17th to be catching, making his spring debut. He makes his spring debut, then all of a sudden he's shut down, and now they're practicing or really preaching patience and moving slowly, and he's still down in extended spring training, catching every other day because recovery after the day he catches is still become an issue. So it seems like they might have pushed the envelope a little too soon. Again, the one-year mark on Tommy John for him is the beginning of June. So I think that now they're trying to take things slowly. Caleb Joseph playing well, obviously, makes them a little bit more willing to take things a little bit more slow with Matt Wieters. So they hope to have him back at some point. I don't think you see him until at least June. He's got to catch back-to-back games, so he's got to go on a rehab assignment. And the Orioles aren't going to take him back to catch one or two games a week. He's got to be ready to take that starting spot over again. So I think it just goes to say that they really tried to push that timeline, tried to hammer it. He had no setbacks, and it was just too soon for that ligament. It wasn't fully ready.
Do you think if they had to do it again, they would do it any differently, or were there just was it just something that kind of came up out of nowhere?
You know, that's tough to say because they kept saying that he was right on schedule. He said he felt great, and he caught that game and then just was shut down. Like, again, had elbow issues, like felt like it was coming back. So I don't know if they feel like maybe they rushed him or if everyone just undervalued how long this timetable would take. It's tough because not a lot of catchers had Tommy John. So there's not a lot of experience to lean on in terms of other guys who had this and potential timelines at all. So I think maybe they regret pushing the envelope in spring training, looking back, but I don't think that they were overly aggressive at any point with Matt Wieters.
It can be hard to separate the medical from the sort of rehabbing the baseball shape, but are there any medical worries about Wieters' recovery, or is it just a matter of getting everything back to where he's at sort of full strength and speed and able to play baseball on a regular basis?
I haven't heard any medical worries. I think mostly it's baseball shape, and it's so grueling for a catcher. I mean, if he was coming back to try to play second base or, you know, DH, it'd be a totally different story. But, you know, they need him, and they need him to be their starting catcher when he comes back. So it just seems like it's taking a lot longer than it should. But when you look, step back and look at it, he's still less than a year removed. So I don't think it's any medical issue. I haven't heard any medical issue mentioned. It's just a very slow rehab process, building back up an elbow to deal with a ton of work expected of him.
What are you seeing from Chris Davis? I mean, I know we talked early and we were encouraged, but his line right now looks kind of like what you'd expect to see, and I got to think that's encouraging. He's not, the batting average is not way down. He's hitting some home runs. Overall, we're 5 weeks in, and it looks like this is sort of what you would have wanted to see from him. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the last week or two, he's really kind of come on too, and I agree. It's Chris Davis. He's going to strike out a lot. He's going to hit some home runs, and that's just the kind of guy he is. So I don't think there's anything to be worried about. I think this is kind of, as you said, what you expected from him. He is going to go on tears, and there's going to be weeks where he looks like he can't hit anything. So that's just going to be the way it's going to go. I think for him as a hitter, he's going to be streaky. He's going to be a guy that you really try and play the hot hand when he's going well, and when he's not, you've got to ride it out as long as you can. So I don't think you could have expected any more of Chris Davis at this point in the season.
Meanwhile, the numbers don't look good for Steve Pearce right now. He's bounced around some. I mean, he's a guy who's asked to do a lot of different things and probably has one of the tougher jobs. But is it worrisome at all that he's not hitting more?
A little bit. And I think one of the second base experiment is to keep him in the lineup because, you know, they were just running out of ways when Jimmy Breedy's hitting as well as he is. Can't take him out of the lineup. So having Pearce at second keeps him some at bat. I think they're trying to get him back on his feet here a little bit. But with that being said, he had such a good year last year, you know, career year. And I don't think he's going to expect that either. I mean, I think the real Steve Pearce is probably somewhere in between there. So they really need to get him going. They've been fortunate that they have enough guys going well that it hasn't become quite a glaring issue. But I still think this is a big week for him in New York.
Bill, some news in the last couple of days, something that they're calling a setback in Alex Cobb's recovery. How significant is it, and what's the level of concern there?
I just got finished talking to the GM, Matt Silverman, and he says, you know, they're still kind of in a wait and see mode. Probably will know by the time they get back to Tropicana how they will proceed with this thing. They're not saying he needs surgery yet. They're not saying he doesn't. So right now, they're, again, there's further evaluation. But that, I would say this, he's probably now, based on how long he's been down and being shut down again, there's probably a good chance that they'll have Matt Moore back maybe before Cobb.
So if the questions are things like, does he need surgery, that means we're not talking about a few days here one way or the other. This is a pretty significant thing, whatever it turns out to be, yes?
No, I mean, it still could be. They still could. They're just being overly cautious. Personally, I'd be surprised if it's not a situation where he needs surgery. You know, I mean, the forearm is very close to the elbow. But, again, they're not saying that that's what it is yet. And again, they've got to see further evaluation. So I would probably be surprised if it didn't end up with surgery, but that's not what they're saying.
What exactly happened? Was it something where he felt bad the day after throwing? Was it something that was wrong during a throw? What happened with Cobb?
The details of that were kind of vague, but he basically did not want to go out and throw on Sunday. He was going to do, he'd done a bullpen off a mound, and he was supposed to throw off a flat ground, and he just had not felt right. So they banged it, and so he was supposed to see Dr. Heaton and the team orthopedic in St. Petersburg. I asked Silverman if he was going to go see Dr. Andrews, and he did not. He said that's not, you know, out there yet, whether or not he is or not. So, it's a wait-and-see thing with that.
You mentioned Matt Moore. How is he coming along?
He's progressing well, and Silverman talking about that, because I was asking him if this meant they would be out looking for somebody else. He said that they're thinking June-ish with Moore. So Moore has not had any setbacks. He's been throwing well. So, you know, that could be one of those that finishes up on a positive note, maybe even a little earlier than what they're expecting.
One other key injured pitcher for the Rays is Jake McGee. It sounds like he's getting very close. What's his status?
his status is good. I think he'll be back. You know, initially he would have been back at the end of this road trip, but he ramped it up a little too much. He got out there and was playing around and throwing 98, which he can do. But that kind of gave him a setback because he ended up having a sore back from that. So that shut him down for, you know, 3 or 4 days, and then he got back on track. So I'd be pretty surprised if we don't see him back out there in the next week to 10 days.
I am a big Chris Archer fan. He's a guy I've enjoyed watching pitch for a few years now, somebody I saw in spring training and just said, wow. He's a guy that coming into this year, you know, people did these sort of, okay, who's the next Kluber? And he was kind of a popular pick as a guy to go from pretty good to really elite. The early results look like that's what's happening. The early results are pretty dazzling. Do you think that this guy has full-on number one in him, or is this more a hot streak? What are you seeing from Archer right now, and is it maybe not 164 ERA sustainable, but number one starter caliber sustainable?
Well, as you know, he definitely has number one stuff. I think it was a matter of finding some consistency, and he seems to be, I mean, he's been really consistent so far. So when you got that number one type stuff with consistency, you know, it's kind of dangerous. So I would agree with everything you said. In fact, I've got to bring something up with you. You asked me to make an outlandish prediction at the beginning of the year. So I said, well, what the heck? I'll go Chris Archer wins 20 games. And you told me I was nuts. So we got that one on the table, right?
Yeah, but if I said that, I meant it about the offense, because there's no secret. I love that guy as a pitcher.
Okay.
Is it as simple as just kind of refining his control and throwing a few more strikes, or is there something else that's working for him here lately?
You know what? I think it is, and I think it's the same thing with Odorizzi, what we saw with him do last night. It's a matter of damage control. Both of them, and more Odorizzi than Archer, but they just couldn't seem to shake when they got into a little bit of trouble. That would manifest into a big inning instead of like what Odorizzi did last night. You know, he had two clean innings and seven innings, and he got out of there with one run. You know, learning how to clean up those messes is about as important as having good stuff, I think. And I think both of those two guys are really starting to get it.
What's the story with Desmond Jennings, who was just put on the DL?
He's got bursitis in his knee, you know, just an aching knee. And a lot of, you know, a big contributing factor to that is all the artificial turf they've played on. So it's just, you know, going to be a rest situation. And, you know, who knows? He could be back, you know, as soon as when they get home. I know he's pretty close to being the retro on his DL. You know, he's pretty close to coming off or being eligible to come off anyway. So I imagine they'll let him take the final days to see if he's got the thing. But they're, you know, they've said all along there's no structural damage. It's just the soreness.
Is there reason to think that might have played a part in his slow start to the season, that maybe he was aching for a while before he let on?
You know, there could be, but the one thing that stands out is he had 5 stolen bases, which I kind of think, too, he came in a little bit lighter this year, though he wouldn't tell us how much lighter, and I wonder if he did that primarily to take a little load off his legs, because he came in looking like a heavyweight almost last year. Not fat, but a lot more muscle. He did come in lighter, but he got off to a slow start with the bat. I still think a lot of that had to do with he had such a torrid spring, you just can't keep that up. So I would go more that direction than his legs were hurting him. Although, you know, based on where he is now, I'm sure they were a contributing factor to some degree.
While we are doing a Bill Was Right All Along edition of MLB.com Extras, you never once panicked about Evan Longoria. You said this guy's good, he's healthy, he's going to hit. Right now, you're looking pretty good on that one. Is it a small difference or a big difference now that he's getting results?
Are you talking about with what he's doing or what the team's doing?
What he's doing. He's hitting like you said he would.
He looks like, you know, it looked like just all of a sudden some of them started to fall in. I know he had a 4-for-4 night a week or so ago, and, you know, it turned into like 6 or 7 hits in a row over 2 games. And, you know, some of them were hit hard and some of them just fell in. And I think that's, you know, the whole nature of a batting average. Sometimes you're stroking it well. And all along, Kevin Cash was telling us that Longoria's swing looked good. He was having good at bat. It's just a matter of time, and that's kind of proven out. In fact, tonight he could get his 1,000th career hit. Last night he got 999, so we'll wait and see.
That sounds like a story for Rays.com.
Here you go.
We've talked about this a couple times, but Rene Rivera is still not hitting. Is there any kind of internal alternative? I know they didn't sign Jaso to be a catcher, so even if he comes back, even whenever he comes back, he's probably not it. But what kind of alternative is there to a Rene Rivera hitting 128?
I think right now the only alternative is leaving him. They really like what he's doing behind the plate. He has a history last year, you know, particularly of producing offensively. Ash has said several times he thinks he's pressing a little bit. So, I think they'll try and ride out the storm. He plays hard. The pitchers love throwing to him. So I don't think there's any kind of panic button on that.
Do they have any interest in bringing in Saltalamacchia now that he's been released as, if not necessarily a starter, but as another option at catcher?
I've not heard anything about that, no.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.